You're listening to SBS News.
Options for Australians to immediately leave Lebanon have been reduced with disruptions to flights out of Lebanon's only international airport in Beirut. In 2006, the airport was rendered unusable after Israeli forces bombed it. Australians were forced to evacuate by sea, a process which took much longer. The Australian government is now urging those in Lebanon to leave immediately on any available commercial flight after the deadly attack in the Golan Heights over the weekend. Middle East scholar at the Australian National University, Ian Parmiter, was the former Australian ambassador to Lebanon. He told SBS's Biwa Kwan, the latest update in travel advice on Lebanon should be heeded.
At this time of year, there are a very, very large number of Australians of Lebanese background who take holidays in Lebanon. They go back to see family or just simply to enjoy a Mediterranean holiday, because Lebanon is really very beautiful in the summertime, as I know from living there. The upshot is that there could be at least 30,000 Australians who may be there. And if Israel starts attacking Lebanese infrastructure, there could be a rush by these people to try to get out. And planes may not be prepared to land in an environment where there might be Israeli missile and air attacks occurring. In 2006, the airport was bombed, and the airport was unusable for several months. And the only way that Australians were able to get out in the end was by sea. It really took some time for that to happen. It's a situation where inevitably the Australian government, through the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, has warned Australians not to travel to Lebanon, and has also warned Australians that if they are in Lebanon, they should now leave for their own safety.
Some of the remarks that I've been reading and hearing have been Australians do have a lot of family connections there, and this threat has been hanging over in terms of the tit-for-tat cross-border exchanges for quite some time, and we've already seen disruptions to flights and shipping already. Whether this one is needing to be taken more seriously?
Well, I think it has to be taken very seriously. This is Israel is involved in fighting, certainly on one front, in the southern front in Gaza, and now it is being, it looks like, getting involved in at least some form of hostilities in Lebanon itself on a northern front. It already, of course, has been fighting in Yemen. A missile or drone, I think it was, from Yemen actually did hit Tel Aviv, an extraordinary distance for the drone to travel. And as well as that, back in April, there was a major attack on Israel with something like 300 missiles and drones fired by Iran against Israel. So the situation in the region is very tense. It would be most unwise for any Australians to travel to the region at this time, given the volatility of the situation, particularly Lebanon at the moment, after this attack on Druze people in northern Israel. These people are regarded by Israel as under their protection, and they will be determined to ensure that there's no further Hezbollah attacks in that area. I might add that this attack was probably a mistake. What I've been reading is that Israeli intelligence seems to believe that they actually had aimed, if Hezbollah had aimed an Iranian-made rocket at an Israeli military base on Mount Hermon. It overshot that base and instead, and tragically, the village of Majd al-Shams, which is a Druze village. So that's, I think, the reason that Hezbollah has denied the attack, because they actually have Druze as political allies in internal Lebanese politics. So they don't want to admit that they actually, that we think actually by accident, did cause the deaths of tragically of these young people who were playing soccer in this village. But regardless of how all that plays out, the reality is that Israel is determined to make Hezbollah desist from taking Israel. Israel also has great concern because about 60, 70,000 Israelis from northern Israel have had to evacuate their homes because of missiles being fired, rockets and drones being fired across the border by Hezbollah. It's a very difficult situation generally, and certainly be most unwise for Australians to be travelling there. They will have may have made their plans sometime before. They will be going into a very dangerous area if they go.
And the updated travel advisory from the Australian government is urging any Australians in Lebanon to leave immediately. They're saying the Australian government can't guarantee that they'll be able to facilitate flights. They should grab whatever available commercial flight is available. Just how delicate is the situation with Beirut only having the one airport as an access point for people to leave?
Beirut is the only international airport. There are some other smaller airports, there's a smaller one in northern Lebanon, not able to take international carriers. The big problem is that if serious infrastructural damage starts to be caused by an Israeli attack on Lebanon, there probably will be panic and a desperate attempt by all foreigners who are visiting Lebanon at this time, and there are a lot, because the summertime is when they come, and quite probably a lot of Lebanese as well, to try to get onto the remaining planes. Some airlines have already announced that they won't be flying into Beirut Airport simply because of the danger to their aircraft. So Australians who delay their departure from Lebanon could find that either the airport has been closed and that, well, may be bombed. Certainly the Israelis bombed the airport in 2006 and made it unusable. But as well as that, there may be very few flights. And as the travel advisory says, that those flights may turn out to be very expensive because supply and demand are very likely to put their prices up to travel people, to get people out of the country.
And now about the Golan Heights area, which was where this missile landed, and the Druze people. What do we understand? You've alluded to it earlier in the conversation about the target and what precedent that set, because reading the reactions from the locals in the area, they say they're used to sounds of sirens, they're used to the risk, but they were really surprised when the missile landed in the playground, brought into focus these Druze local residents.
Yes, that's right. I mean, the Druze local residents were living there before Israel took over the Golan Heights in 1967 with the war there. Well, they actually are Syrian territory and recognized internationally, except by the United States, as Syrian territory. And the Druze themselves, some of them have taken Israeli citizenship because there are material advantages for them in terms of being able to work in Israel. But quite a number of these original Druze inhabitants, and there are about 20,000 of them on the Golan Heights, some of them actually do go to Syria for their education. There are some Druze students from the Golan Heights who study at Damascus University. They do so by travelling to Cyprus and then on to Damascus that way. So there are these connections with Syria, but by the same token, it has been held by Israel since 1967. Israel applied Israeli law to the Golan Heights in 1981. It wasn't a formal annexation, but it was much the same thing. Israeli law applies there. Israel certainly has no intention of giving the Golan Heights back, primarily because it's such strategic territory. Whoever controls the Golan Heights is able to essentially survey and command the whole area around there, looking down into Syria, looking down into northern Israel as well. So Israel won't want that territory to be given back to Syria. So it's likely to remain the way it is for some time. But for now, the Druze are remaining there. Their allegiance to Israel as such is certainly, it varies. Prime Minister Netanyahu made a visit to Majd al-Shams, the village where the attack took place. Some demonstrators among the Druze who were very angry at his visit destroyed a wreath that he took and laid where the killings occurred. They were simply angry because they don't see themselves as being part of this fight that Israel has with Hamas. And they were angry that Israel had essentially, as they saw it, Israeli policies had drawn them into this violence. That's why they made those comments.
And as a former ambassador to the region, to Lebanon, we've spoken about the 2006 war. How do you see it in terms of, I guess, Middle East has always had a volatility to it? What hopes there could be that this we get over this? Because there's certainly concern that any talks of truce in Gaza and the like will be derailed by what's happening now.
This won't do any good for the peace talks. The talks involving the Americans and the Israelis and representatives of Hamas to try to reach a sort of ceasefire and eventual long-term ceasefire with release of the hostages and release of prisoners on both sides, both by Hamas and by the Israelis. What's happened is the raising of temperature in the region won't help those negotiations. But by the same token, the history of the Middle East, and I've been living in the Middle East since off and on since 1977, is that tensions rise and fall. There are wars. You never actually get a complete end to the tensions, but they do die down. And that's what we're hoping to see at the moment. The Middle East is an area which has a lot of problems that are very, very difficult to resolve. I don't think personally they can be resolved. I think they have to be managed. And that's what we're looking to do at this stage, to get the ceasefire in place with Hamas. The Americans have been sending a representative to Lebanon to try to see if talking through Shia representatives, not directly to Hezbollah, because the Americans regard Hezbollah as we do, as a terrorist organization, but to essentially work out a way in which the mutual tit-for-tat fighting of sending of rockets and drones across the border can stop. Ironically, the best way for it to stop would be if the fighting in Gaza were to stop, because Hezbollah has already said that it will stop sending missiles across the border into northern Israel if Israel stops its military operation in Gaza.
They're very, very much intertwined.
So it's all of this has got its own catch-22 elements to it. It's a tragic situation, and of course, the ordinary people, as we saw with this shocking and tragic incident on the weekend, are the ones who bear the brunt, particularly children.